to Fearless Dentistry, the podcast where we dive deep into the world of dentistry with your fearless host, Dr. John Gordon. Get ready to uncover the secrets, gain valuable insights, and conquer any dental challenge that comes your way. From advanced techniques, innovative technologies, and the ever-important set skills, Dr. Gordon will fearlessly guide you through the evolving landscape of dentistry. This is Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon.
Welcome to this episode of the Fearless Dentistry Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. John Gordon. I'm excited to have with me today Chelsea Myers. I became acquainted with her and her material on LinkedIn, and I have studied her for a while, listened to some of her podcast episodes, and actually watched them on her LinkedIn account, and I've really enjoyed her content that she posts up on LinkedIn. And so I made connection with her, and fortunately, I didn't have to grovel and beg for her to become a guest on my podcast. She just openly accepted, and I'm very grateful for that. And so, Chelsea, welcome to the podcast today. I'm thrilled to death to have you with us.
Oh, thank you. The pleasure is mutual. I'm very excited to be here today. Thanks for having me, John.
Yeah. Chelsea, you have a number of things going on, and you're a busy person, and that's great because you've just got so much that you're putting out there as far as great material. You have the leadership development, coaching for doctors and executives, personal awareness, and cultural development and growth in their leadership skills. You also have your dental life coach business. And as I mentioned, your podcast, Dental Brain Crops. Share with us a little bit about you here, Chelsea.
Sure. So, you know, I think it makes the most sense if we just start at the beginning. So when I was 16 years old, you know, my parents had always encouraged us to figure out what we wanted to do and go to college and get good grades. And so I was really focused and, thinking that I was going to do something in, math always came easy to me, thinking I was going to do something in finance, maybe medicine, but definitely something that had to do with numbers. And I came home from school one day and learned that my dad had died in a fatal car accident. And when something like that happens, I start with that not to get sympathy or, you know, have everyone going, oh, poor her. I say that because none of us are exempt from chaos and unexpected events and incredibly traumatic experiences. We all get some garden variety of that in our lives. And what I learned and what that taught me at 16 years old was how important relationships are. And so I did continue on the path and got my degree in business finance, which got my foot in the door at Wells Fargo Bank. But having had that early experience that really opened my eyes to the importance of connection and the human component of everything that we do, when I took that position at Wells Fargo Bank, I quickly found myself really interested in the relationship component. And what I was doing was it was a process improvement project, which required me to implement new technologies and new systems with a group of highly experienced individuals. And so naturally, they weren't all that excited about this girl coming in about half their age with almost no experience, telling them that this was what we were going to do and it was going to be great. And when I looked into their eyes, rather than just seeing the resistance and feeling that we were just butting heads and it was going to be hopeless, when I looked into their eyes, I saw something that I had recognized in me at one time. I saw fear and I saw concern, and their concerns were legitimate. They had an established, tried and true way of doing something, and the company was saying, we're going to do something else, and this is your person that's going to help you do it. And I understood at a deeper level and probably beyond what made sense for my age and experience. I understood what they were going through. And so I was able to connect with them. And we, over the course of a year, had a really successful outcome with this project. And towards the end of that project, a manager that we shared the floor with approached me and said, "Hey, Chelsea, what is it that you've been doing over there? Because quite honestly, we all expected you to fail." And I was like, "Well, thank you for that vote of confidence." But he said, "No, really, I need to be able to manage change in a similar way where my team stays cohesive and engaged and they still like coming to work." And so I talked to him about the approach that I was taking. And at that point, I had learned some of the things that worked really well and that were important with each phase of change management. And he said, "You know, you've got to talk to this dentist buddy of mine. He's been talking about hiring a consultant, and I think this is the type of support that he's referring to." And so that was my entry into dental.
And your part of your passion is helping dentists, isn't it?
Absolutely.
And the dental industry needs help. I admit that. When I speak with dentists and visit with, when I speak in groups and individuals, there's a lot of, I'm going to say, unrealized suffering or suffering and difficulty and obstacles that occur that people just don't know how to deal with. And people with insight, such as yourself, are really important for us to incorporate into our practices. But all too often, again, they don't realize the depth of the issue because they're not willing to admit it. Therefore, they're not willing to go out and get help. And I spoke to a young man yesterday on a podcast, and that was one of the main things that it came a pivotal point in his practice and for himself personally that he recognized, I have to get help. If I'm going to continue, if I'm going to stay in dentistry, I have to get help. And he went out and sought help. And I thought, kudos to you, because, you know, again, when we seek help, Chelsea, outside of our practices, sometimes we view that personally as a weakness, or we think that people around us are going to view that as weak. How do you see that?
You couldn't have said it better. I think that I've been very pleased with what I've seen just in general in our society, the shift in recognizing the importance of mental health and making it okay for people to talk about their areas of opportunity so that we can get the supports that we need. And I've been really pleased to see that we're integrating that into our industry. I will say I've been a bit surprised as well with the rates of depression and suicide and, you know, other mental health struggles that a lot of our professionals have, that we are just now at the point where state boards are saying, okay, required CE an hour in mental health now. I would have thought this would have been integrated a long time ago, but in any event, very happy to know that it is now becoming a topic and an important topic and one that we're all getting behind because, you know, we are a human-centric business. We, no matter what AI comes along or what systems are able to automate, we are still going to have humans involved in this industry. And it's really important that the humans aren't trading their mental health or trading their life for their profession, but that they're enriched and able to show up with enthusiasm and feel like they're a better person for having been a part of this industry in their day-to-day activities.
Yeah. I've talked with two individuals, actually had them on my podcast. Both of them are involved in helping doctors, dentists transition from dentistry because they're overstressed. They have extreme anxiety. They encounter depression as a result of that. They don't enjoy going to the office. When they come home, they're anxious-ridden there, frustrated, and their life starts to fall apart, and they don't think that they have options. And for them, one of them stayed in dentistry, and one retired from dentistry as a result of that. but they put together an organization to help people with mental health and to help them through these things. And I think that's, I think those issues are far more prevalent than what we want to recognize or realize. Are you seeing that?
Yes. You know, a couple of years ago, right before COVID is when I started my podcast. And the reason that I was prompted to start it was I would have these doctors coming to me thinking that they were some sort of anomaly, that this was their private, very unique issue that only they were going through. And having been approached in that same fashion a number of times, I was like, you know, we need to unveil this here. These are not just issues that people in dentistry are experiencing, but these are human issues. Anxiety is a human condition. Depression is a human condition. And the reality is that it is a really unique industry that we're in, and the life of a clinician is unique. And so if we can create a support system where people recognize that while we have some of the same strengths and talents and ambitions in common, we also may have some of the same areas of opportunity. And those aren't as fun to hang out in, right? We like to hang out where we're confident, but we need to know where our support is as well. And just sometimes by knowing that you're not alone in it can diminish some of the mystery and some of the pain surrounded with that process of getting improvement and getting help.
Yeah. I think a lot of times we look at our particular life and circumstances, situations and stress and whatever, and think, golly, this is so unique to me. And I think a lot of that occurs, you know, some of the social media has kind of been ornery to us in the fact that people post their greatest accomplishments, their trips. Dentists, we have had a tendency to post our wonderful staff meetings and everybody's smiling, and we post our wonderful work and whatever, and life is good. And the viewer on the other side of that is going, gosh, that's not my experience at all. What is wrong with me? And that further escalates or pushes them down that black hole, and it's more difficult for them to come out of. So consequently, that's why at a certain point I stopped looking at Facebook and some of the social media, because I didn't want to go down that rabbit hole. And particularly when I retired, you know, when you retire, I left my handpiece behind, but I didn't leave my energy, enthusiasm, drive, desire to continue to learn, to lead, to mentor, and that type of thing. And so I've learned to pick my places where I spend my time. But I want to get back to you and your life, dental life coaching. Share with us about that, Chelsea, because I think you are a real diamond. And I think you have, again, the material that you put out there, every post just seems to hit me square, and I'm going, this is awesome material. So share with us about your life coach, dental life coaching.
Oh, thank you. That's really encouraging to hear. I love getting the feedback, good and bad, so I can know where to go with it next. But, you know, when I first started coaching, I said, you know, that manager introduced me to his doctor friend, and I didn't jump in with both feet. I was doing some coaching on nights and weekends, and then became very interested and decided I wanted to partner in some dental practices, which gave me an additional vantage point to see what it's really like through different lenses, where my coaching is applied and appropriate, where I had areas of opportunity to grow. And what I ended up discovering through all of, you know, my experiences coaching doctors is there were 13 areas, not that everybody struggles in all 13 areas, but there were really 13 areas where that needed to be looked at to figure out which parts were working really, really well and which parts we wanted to either consider some development in, reprogram altogether, particularly where we have limiting beliefs or where we have thought processes that just seem to perpetuate discomfort and keep us from where we're trying to go. And so those 13 areas are ones that are pretty typical for me to work on. And that might include our beliefs and thoughts about money, the way that we manage our time, the way that we care for and manage our minds, our relationship with failure and success. And the reason these are so important is because leadership is relationships, and relationships begin with you. And so when I'm looking at my team and realizing that certain things aren't happening or they're not happening predictably, I need to look at myself and realize that my team is only as strong and as equipped as I am. And so the answer isn't that they need to change or that we need more people. The answer is the leadership. And that can be a tough pill to swallow, but if you're willing to at least consider it and play with some of the ideas, it's remarkable the impact we can make and the changes that can occur within a relatively short period of time. And the added bonus is the alleviated stress and the inner peace that we experience as the leaders of those organizations.
Do you find when you go into the dental offices to work with them that do dentists struggle with what leadership really is? And then once you've introduced this to them, their ability to completely conceptualize it and then become that. Share with me that path and the difficulty that maybe you've experienced in working with doctors on that leadership issue.
Well, here's one thing that I know to be really, really important. I have learned that it is really important to work with the right type of clients. Just like there's the right patients for a doctor, there are the right clients for a coach. And I absolutely love my clients. I work with some of the most incredible individuals who are loving and they really have a genuine interest in making an impact and they want to improve. If there's an area of opportunity to improve and they're aware of it, they want to work on it. They want the know-how. A lot of times what I'm finding is that it's not a lack of desire or it's not even a careless approach. It's just that the information wasn't provided. The tools weren't there. And so once we unveil that, hey, there's this area of opportunity here, or there's an opportunity for us to make an impact there, and here's the tools to do that, I love the tenacity and the willingness to do hard things and the willingness to try something that's completely foreign that I find in my dental clients. What do you think, John? What was your experience? What was your exposure to leadership in dental school? What was your experience as a leader? What do you think?
You know, I love your idea. I mean, your thoughts there a minute ago on leadership and the people that you work with and being selective with your clients. That is really a big factor. I like the word that you use, tenacity, that the people that you work with have a tenacious desire and commitment to becoming better leaders. What was my experience? Zero going through dental school. My experience was 100% tooling us, T-O-O-L-I-N-G, to become clinicians, not to become the overall doctor, leader. It wasn't until, Chelsea, that I, 2 years out of dental school, I went down to the Pankey Institute, and I don't remember how I found out about it, but in my C1 experience, Dr. Pankey was still alive, and I came back from that, and I was just blown away with the quality of individuals, the quality of conversations, the quality of thought, the quality of sharing, collaboration, partnership, togetherness. And I really, to be honest with you, I had about a 3 to 4 month post-seminar depression thinking, how do I get there? Knowing that that's what I wanted to do. And it's like, when you see something and you experience something, you absolutely know it's the right thing for you and it fits, but you have absolutely no idea. You're just dropped out in the middle of the ocean and said, okay, see that island 10 miles over there? Swim to it. And you have no idea how to get there. And that's the way that I felt. So I continued with the continuum. I went through C5 at that point. And it was an evolutionary process. But I was the type that you mentioned a minute ago, the tenacious learner, the tenacious commitment individual, that I developed a vision and that's where I wanted to go with it. And it was not easy. You know, you fumble a lot along the way, but those fumbles, you have the opportunity to learn from them. Sometimes I didn't learn from them. You know, you get frustrated and you give up for a short time frame, maybe a day, couple of days. There's only one point in my career where I really felt like I had given up for a while, and that was right after my father died in 98. For about 6 months afterwards, I had no desire, nothing. And I eventually knew that my patients needed me. I knew that my staff needed me. I knew that my family needed me, and I slowly evolved out of it. But the leadership, it was tough. It was hard. You know, you experience staff issues. You don't know what to do with them. And so our abilities coming out of dental school, Chelsea, as you know, with the doctors that you've talked with, there's no training. And I don't know that there ever will be, to be honest with you. And so it's people becoming exposed and knowing who you are sooner in their career and finding out about Chelsea Myers and the Dental Life Coach so that you can get into their practice with them early on. If I had someone such as you early on in my career, it's kind of like, whoa, what would have really happened? What would really have happened? Mm-hmm. So we need to get you into the offices.
Yeah. And you know what? One of the things that makes it so important is you don't know what you don't know, right? So you graduate from dental school, you're credentialed, you think you're ready. But then when you realize that you have these gaps in your training where leadership's concerned and you walk into a practice and you are expected to be a leader in all respects. And by the way, sometimes you're leading people who have been doing their job a lot longer and are maybe much older than you. And so that has to not matter. You still need to be able to function as a leader. But these are the types of dynamics, other people's experience, other people's age, other people's opinion of you, that can quickly chip away at a new doctor's confidence level and a new doctor's belief in his or herself, that translate to lots of years of unnecessary anxiety, unneeded low self-confidence, and they become patterns of functioning. I'm really, really good at the clinical part. I'm not good with people. I'm not good at leadership. I have no desire to be a partner because I don't want to have to grow into that role. And it's not true. Okay. These are conclusions based upon not a lack of ability, just a lack of a skill set that we can definitely equip people with, and it changes everything.
I like the way that you said that, lack of skill set. And that's where I came in with this, is I lacked the skill set to be a leader and to effectively communicate. So when you come out of dental school, I was 26 years old, and I was a young little dude. And I looked at, I was kind of like a Doogie Howser. And here I am going out into the practice and I'm trying to communicate with the patient or sell them on a crown. And the slightest little objection was devastating to me. It was a rejection. And I didn't know how to handle it. And so after rejection, after rejection, after a while, you stop proposing. And here I was, and you mentioned, in your career, 16 years old or a little bit older, as you evolved into your skill set of presenting this information that you had to make organizations successful to people that were twice your age and expecting them to take your advice. And here I was, youngster, talking to 48, 58, whatever old individuals. I was intimidated. The imposter syndrome set in. And you really start second guessing. And so you get this mindset and it's hard to overcome. And so that's where, you know, I learned I'm naturally an introvert, believe it or not. And I'm the type of guy, when I go to CE courses, I'll be on the front row taking notes with my pen and my pad. Once it's over, I escape. I go to the back of the room, go to the corner. And if someone comes up to me, okay, I'm learning. I'm getting better. Finally, really engaging people. And it does, it becomes a confidence in a skill set of communication. That's all it was.
Right. Right. And it's, I think it goes back to what we were saying earlier about just those perpetuated thought processes. Something starts as a rejection, and then the rejection is catastrophized into this, you know, am rejected rather than the treatment was rejected. I am rejected. And then that impacts all of your interactions for a very long time.
It does. And it did. It took me years of working, and I continued to go to the Pankey Institute, although, you know, they didn't really sit down with us and talk to us a lot about how to communicate, but I saw and I witnessed, and I knew that that's what I need to become. And particularly when I transitioned into my lifestyle dental practice, I knew I had to learn how to communicate different with these people. I want to go back to your 13 areas where doctors struggle. I'm just going to state it as such because that's what it is, really. What would you say would be the top two areas where doctors struggle that impacts their practice? And as you mentioned, the trajectory of success of their practice.
I'm going to say, and I'm, you know, depending on the doctor, one may be more prevalent than the other, but confidence and awareness. The confidence piece, we've talked a lot about that here, but it really does impact everything. I mean, think about when you've had a really bad day at the office. You come home to your family, who you should be relatively familiar with, and even those interactions are prickly because of you, right? Because you're not feeling good about yourself. And so the confidence piece is really, really important. When I'm doing exit interviews, you know, sometimes organizations will get me on board proactively, which is great and healthy. And other times they come to me and they're like, hey, both sides of the house are on fire. Can you help us? And that's a different animal. But yes, I can also, if that's an appropriate client, help there. And when I'm doing exit interviews and talking to people about why they're leaving a practice or why they're leaving an organization, more often than not, John, it's not because they got a job closer to home. It's not because they got an offer of a pay raise somewhere else. It's because of their perception of their experience at work. And it's one that they no longer want to repeat. And so when a doctor or a leader is not feeling confident about his or herself, it is impacting the way that we communicate. It's impacting the way that we don't communicate. It's impacting the way that we offer praise and guidance and mentorship and growth opportunities. It impacts everything because you just can't hide. Energy is an invisible force, right? You can't hide how you're feeling, and it translates to results. And then the awareness piece is really important because, confident or not, we all have areas of opportunity to improve on. And it's important that we're aware of a couple of things. We're aware of our mind, and we're able to watch our mind and see what's really going on in there, making intentional decisions about how we want to spend our energy, what thoughts we actually want to entertain, which ones we need to dismiss for our own good and everyone else's. And we need to be aware of the people around us. Listening, being a mastered listener, is such an important tool that we need to have as leaders and just as contributors to the relationships that we're in everywhere. Being able to listen and hear what's being said and hear what's not being said so that we can contribute to that situation in a most impactful way is really important. And it begins with a high level of awareness.
I like those two answers because that's the confidence. I heard yesterday someone used the phrase, the leader brings the weather. How true.
I love that.
Leaders bring the weather.
I love that.
Mm-hmm. And I look back at my career and I realized when I brought in the clouds, the thunderstorm and the lightning, my staff responded as such. And that was one of the things that I think hit me the hardest was at times I wanted to hold my staff accountable for the atmosphere and the cultural health of the practice. And when I finally realized, John, you're passing the buck, and we have to be, and that's where awareness comes in, is that we have to be aware of the weather that we bring into the office. And also, you know, like you said, we are so perceptive of emotion and energy, even though it's one of those things that it's intangible, but it's so pervasive with us, and we see it and we feel it. That's why with me, I paused every time I went in to see a hygiene patient. I paused for a moment outside the hygiene room to gather my mindset, to get my mindset correct so I could be a contributor to that patient's experience in my office that day. I paused every time that I went in to see a new guest or a new patient, again, to reconfigure and recalculate my mindset so that I was going in with the appropriate amount of energy, insight, and presence of myself to be with that person. And the relationship aspect, to be vulnerable. And when I started doing that, Chelsea, I just saw my practice really, really take off in a wonderful direction that I never even imagined. Pausing.
Yeah.
Redirecting your mindset. What's my narrative? What do I expect of myself when I go in to see that patient? And sometimes, you know, Chelsea, I just needed to pause a moment to really be aware of who was in the chair. I would look and see who is there so I could go in and greet them with their first name and really be with them. So I love your answers. I like what you said, work with the right clients. And I think that that's really important. My practice was a fee-for-service practice. I was not associated with PPOs at all, and I loved the freedom that it gave me. It allowed me to work on and work with the type of patients that I wanted to. We set our practice. It developed a reputation within the metro area, but I always welcomed any and every individual because I felt like people, when they came to see us, they knew where they were going, and and they had expectations of me and my staff and my practice. So it was kind of a selective nature of getting the right clientele in. And sometimes, you know, the saying, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Well, I appreciate that. Yes, what?
I love that phrase.
Yeah. I take it one step further, though, Chelsea. When the student appears, they're not always ready. And sometimes they don't know the path of readiness. So then it becomes the responsibility of the teacher to create that readiness. And then when the student is ready, the teacher and the student can come together and collaborate with synergism. And so I always looked at it, if a patient came in and they weren't ready, I developed and looked at it as an opportunity for me to put together, as you mentioned, the skill set of communication to open them up to share with me what was it about them that at this particular point they didn't feel they were ready. And that was a very interesting approach for me because I learned a lot about these people. And asking certain questions, I could see it in their face, kind of like, wow, I've never been asked that question before. Or I've never been approached like this. And they start sharing things to me that for the first time they may have really understood the core as to what is the obstacle for them being ready. Interesting.
It's so interesting. You know, when you were talking about the leader bringing the weather, and we were referring to that, meaning, you know, you maybe bring the clouds or the stress. It's also our job to bring the sunshine. So sometimes the concerns that I'm handling have to do with the organizational culture and gossip. Gossip is a really big thing that's going on in our offices. It's the leader's job to not only bring in that sunshine, and I don't just mean change the subject with a joke. We've got to have the confidence and that appropriate conversation to provide students that may not be ready or may not yet be equipped with how to have professional interactions. We've got to equip them and teach them. Here's how we can have good relations at work. Here's how we can keep a positive flow and a good momentum going. And so we need to be aware of what's going on in our offices and where those, you know, those raw students appear. Because it is our job, you know, by not saying something when something's going on in our practices or by ignoring something, we're making it okay.
Yeah, and when we do ignore it and when we ignore it, we're telling our staff or the people around us that this is okay. And the other thing that they may be perceiving is that you are fearful about approaching them as a group. So you may be perceived as a pseudo cowardice leader. And boy, are you sending the wrong message to your staff.
Yes. Yes. And, I have a client who it took a couple of years, but every time there was a particular team member who wanted a raise at regular intervals, unmerited. And when she would get the answer, no, would threaten to leave, so she'd get the raise. And it was given to her. And after this happening twice with me working with this individual, I asked him, I said, you know, so let's just look at it from her point of view. What pattern do you think that she thinks exists here? What do you think she thinks her skills, her tools are to get the raise? And it was just a really good conversation to have. And on top of that, the people around her we're learning also, this is how we get what we want from this doctor.
Yes. Well, it's kind of like I've got two little blonde Maltese over here to my left, Chelsea, and they have learned that if they do a little particular cute thing, they get a little treat out of me. And so what they do is they're continuously hounding me with these little episodes. I've created a nightmare, and that's the way it is in the dental practice. We're giving our staff treats for bad behavior, and as long as they're getting rewarded, why should they stop the pattern? And dentistry is hard. The leadership within the practice is hard. The technical aspect is hard. The culture is hard. The patient directive, you're always going to have upset patients about something. And dealing with all that is just difficult. And we get exhausted with the process, but in the same token, with your dental life coaching and what you bring to them and helping them, I can see that the tremendous value in helping the doctors learn the skills to navigate the difficult waters. And, you know, I think all dental offices and I think all staff and people, they want to feel really good about what they do and they want to feel inner fulfillment. And again, going out and having someone come in from the outside and help him with that is just invaluable. But there are so many coaching, consulting agencies out there that do the exact same thing with every client. And at the end of the 1 year contract with them, you're really no further along than when you started. And again, what I've seen, I wish I would have known about you when I was still practicing. I'd have had you there in a heartbeat. And I went through some of those consulting things, Chelsea, and it was a waste of time and money. And, you know, the thing that I will tell the audience is don't wait. Don't hesitate. But you're going to think that, you know, I'm 35 years old and, man, I've got years to practice. And you really, the time goes awfully fast, doesn't it, Chelsea?
Absolutely.
It goes fast. And, you know, when it came to the point of me making the decision to retire, I looked back and I thought, how did it go by so quickly? And I look at the years and I think of the time that I wasted, not knowing, innocently stupid, that I wasted in not perfecting my human skills, the soft skills. And I wish someone would have awakened me earlier. But consulting like you do was not available when I was young. It just didn't exist. It's there now. And again, with the material that I've read about you and the interviews I've seen with your podcast, Chelsea, you've got it. You've got the it factor with this. And is there anything that you would like to leave with the audience at this point that we've not touched upon that you think is important for them to know about you?
You know, I think the thing that I would want to leave everyone with is just hope. So wherever you're at in your professional journey, whatever your concerns are, whether it's something that I'm an expert in or somebody else is an expert in, I would just encourage everyone, like you said, John, just don't wait. Do some searches. We've got, you know, all kinds of resources at our disposal. Check with people. Do an internet search. And there's so many people that would be happy. I know I would, just to jump on a call and hear what your hopes are and what your goals are and point you in the right direction. If it's not me, I'll certainly help you figure out what I think that next step for you might be. But, you know, of course, your audience is welcome to email me directly, Chelsea, Chelsea at dentallife.coach, or visit the website, dentallife.coach. Or anything else that I can do, I'm just always happy to help.
Yeah. We'll post, Chelsea, at the end of the notes, the show notes, all your contact information to make it easy for them to get a hold of you. And I know that you view, as I view, that there is a greatness within each person out there. Some people, it's easier for that greatness to show through, and some it's more difficult. And I think you and I together are in this industry here now, consulting. Mine is a little bit different path, is to help people realize and help polish that greatness so it comes out and about. I looked at my staff and I felt it was my main responsibility was to help them become the absolute best that they could become. And I looked at, as coaching up of those individuals, I really wanted them to aspire into that greatness within the practice, to feel like they were a person of worthiness and that they were making a difference in the patient's lives and the adjacent staff. But then I also wanted to take that greatness home with them. and for them to leave each day feeling like they had made a positive contribution, then they can go home and continue that at home, because that's where really we're needed. That's where our greatness really lies, is with our family also. I appreciate you spending time with me today, Chelsea. I can't wait to get this posted and get our feedback. We're going to get some downloads, really great downloads on this, I'm sure. No doubt about it. And I want the audience to be sure and give some thought to what we're talking about here and reach out and let Chelsea help discover your greatness within you and polish it. So I appreciate you, Chelsea, for being with us. This is Dr. John, and this is our episode of Fearless Dentistry.
Thank you for joining us on Fearless Dentistry with Dr. John Gordon. Stay fearless, keep pushing boundaries, and continue making a lasting impact in dentistry. Subscribe for more Fearless conversations. Until next time, keep spreading smiles.